From the Len de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of January, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Veig. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Gary Schnitke will be here to discuss the new PACE endorsement for crop insurance. This one will help to manage the risk related to applying nitrogen after planting or split application of nitrogen. Other forms too. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, all on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand, where? At WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at 610.5. That was up 11. May futures at 611, also 11 higher. And December futures, $5.64 a bushel, 7 cents higher for the day. March soybeans up 30, settled at $13.91. The May at $14.75, up 29¾. And November beans, $13.04, up 20½. The bean meal, $8.20 higher, $398.30. And bean oil at $60.76, up $1.68. Wheat futures soft red, $7.96 a bushel, 27½ higher in the March, the hard red March, at $8 even, up 27¼ on the afternoon. Live cattle futures settled at $143.35 per 100 pounds, $1.50 higher. Feeders were up 20 cents at $165.62½, and lean hogs at $91.35, up $2.07. Gold futures at $1,842.60, up $30.20. And crude oil for the day, $85.85 a barrel, up a buck even. U.S. Diesel fuel, a penny and 9 cents higher, $2.63.09. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 35,089, down 170 points for the day. Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing now joins us to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Jackie. Thank you for being with us today.
Hey, Todd. It's good to be back.
Well, I know. It's a tough time of year, and it's been an interesting time of year in the marketplace. I know you keep pretty close track of Brazil and Argentina and the crops there. There's been some rainfall, but can you give me a little idea of what you've been finding as it relates to the condition of those crops and what your expectations might be?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think that it is just so extremely interesting when you look at what's been going on in the marketplace. And, you know, you watch beans go down 29 cents. You watch, you know, they just come apart at the seams, basically. And we know that about 75% to 80% of our market is traded by algorithmic trading. In other words, black boxes. And sometimes if you track them, they'll plunge a market and then come back in and buy like crazy. And I have a gut instinct that that's what we're going to see happen. Whether that's what's happening right now or not, I can't say, Todd, but I'll tell you what. I look at Brazil, you know, we talked about low water levels on the Paraná River last year. Well, I'll tell you what, the drought in southern Brazil and Argentina is just having a profound impact on the water levels on the Paraná River at Rosario, Argentina. And, you know, it was exceptionally low last year at this time, but it improved somewhat over the South American winter season. That improvement's gone. And the water level right now is at the lowest point since 1945. Can you imagine that? Paraná means like the sea in the Tupi-Guarani local indigenous people language, and it's the second longest river in South America at 3,030 miles, and it transports approximately 80% of all Argentina's agricultural products and their exports. And I'll tell you what, that is serious. The water level right now is currently about half of its normal height, and only if they get some rain might it go back to a normal level by the end of March, which is a long ways away. Cargo ships are being forced to load 30% less due to the low water levels. For what they call a handyman-sized vessel, that's 13,000 tons less. For a Panamax, it's 16,000 tons less. And so then those vessels have to leave there and top their loads off at ocean ports like Bahia Blanca or Neotia, and that increases the cost. You know, so the local water officials are calling this twice in a lifetime event, twice in a lifetime in 2 years. Wow. But it certainly seems to be happening increasingly often. So the water from the upstream Itapo Dam, they released, you know, in 2020 and 2021 to help the flow of the river. But the Brazilian officials indicate that the water is not going to get released from that dam until at least February, if and when the reservoir reaches its maximum level. And so, you know, that's a big if and a big when. The water level on the Paraná, they calculated in a really old-fashioned, okay? Water heights reported compared to a long-ago reference point. And this is the interesting part. On January 1st of this year, example, the height was reported at 36 centimeters above the reference point. As of earlier last week, the height was reported at 22 centimeters below the reference point. And the lowest level in history occurred in 1945 when it registered 100 centimeters below the reference point. And this, I mean, I can't stress how serious this situation is. The drought's also impacting their soybean barges out of Paraguay. You know, barges that normally would go down the Paraná River to Argentina are going over to the Paraguay River, at least till they can get back to where the Paraná and the Paraguay River join each other, but even there, they have to reduce their loads by 40%. So they need rain, and they need rain in a big way in order to get things to get better.
Anything else you've been watching in Brazil?
Let's go up to Mato Grosso.
Okay.
Scientists are warning farmers in Mato Grosso to be alert of the presence of white mold and white flies in their soybean fields. This constant wet weather that they've been seeing, it's just been a terrible situation for them. White mold gets into soybean fields when the rows start to close between 45 to 50 days after planting. So, you know, your fungicide treatments should start at that point by land applications, because that treatment needs to get to the lower level of plant where the mold likes to grow. But you can't get to it with aerial applications, and it's been so terribly wet there that they haven't been able to do the land applications like they'd like to. Now, white flies have also been reported in the soybean fields in Mato Grosso. They cause direct damage to the soybeans by sucking out plant juices, indirect damage by transmitting viruses, and it could be particularly damaging to the later mature beans. It's just, so far they've only had low-level infestations, Todd, but if they let it uncontrolled, yield losses could be as high as 10 to 15 sacks per hectare, or 9 to 13 bushels to the acre. And when you get into Paraná, they've had some showers over the weekend in eastern Paraná, but very limited. The forecast is calling for a little bit better, but the soybeans there are rated 34% poor, 37% average, and 29% good. We don't see any excellence. This drought has been the worst, and those early yields are very low on the first beans that they planted. You know, we talked about how they plant them in two different stages. 5 to 25 bushels to the acre is what they're getting. Now, let's roll on down to Argentina.
Sounds good. What are you hearing?
Weather last week, Argentina was brutal. Extremely high temperatures, a lot of lack of rainfall. You know, some of the earlier planted soybeans have already entered the critical reproductive period when hot and dry are not what you want. And there's approximately 1.2 million hectares of beans left to be planted in Argentina, with about 60% of the unplanted beans in northern Argentina. So given the harsh conditions, you know, everybody's pretty skeptical as to whether all of that intended double crop beans are going to get planted. So, you know, we just saw them lower bean production for corn and, I mean, for beans and Argentina and Brazil on this last report. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see some more of that.
Thank you. And thanks for keeping tabs on everything. That's Jackie Vake. She's with Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnucki, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, has written another article for the FarmDoc Daily website. Find the post-application coverage endorsement or PACE article online now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Gary, this particular endorsement is for crop insurance and has to do with post-planting application of nitrogen. What can you tell me about it?
Yeah, so it was developed by Ag Analytics, and it was a consortium of environmental groups, Agri and Meridian and NCJ and Illinois Corn, that came together and developed a product that would be useful in taking the risk out of side dress and post-plant applications of nitrogen.
I understand that applying nitrogen as the crop needs it or after it's planted is considered more environmentally friendly. However, it does seem to involve more risk than pre-application.
And one of the reasons why this product was developed, because a number of farmers indicated that they were concerned about the risk of being able to apply nitrogen after planting.
And crop insurance, as the vehicle for this endorsement, is all about managing risk. How does it handle that?
Yeah, so farmers who sign up for this, and this is a pilot project, so it's only available in the upper. In the upper two-thirds of Illinois. But a farmer would sign up for it, and they would indicate the amount of nitrogen that they expect to apply post-planting. And then based on that post-planting percent, a pace indemnity will be calculated. So let's say a farmer says they'll apply 40% post-plant. They would get a $69 payment if they are not able to apply nitrogen after planting. And that $69 does not depend on the final yield. It's sort of like a hail insurance. It's an event insurance. If you are not available to post-apply nitrogen, you will get this payment. And that $69 payment in that example would have a $2.84 cost per acre, farmer pay premium per acre.
You mentioned that this works somewhat like hail insurance. However, I'm also told that it works a bit like prevent plant.
Yeah. So if you think about prevent plant, you try and plant the crop until the prevent plant date. And if you haven't been able to make the planting or planting by that date, you can take a prevent plant claim. The same thing is true with the pace. You would say after the final window that you were unable to make that nitrogen application. The crop insurance company will look and see if there was wet weather in your area, and most likely there will be. Then you will get paid on the application.
How do the actuarial tables behind this work?
So, the actuarials behind this, the payment is based on the likely loss in yield from not being able to apply nitrogen after planting. So they calculated that number. And then the premium is based on how often that happens. And these post not being able to apply post planting is a rare event, so that's why our premiums are and it's less than 10% of the years, way less than 10% of the years. So that's why our premiums are in the $2 to $3 range for that $69 payment.
Is this PACE endorsement primarily for farmers that are already doing split applications of nitrogen or post-planting applications in some sort, or is it for farmers across the board?
The previous practices of the farmer do not influence whether this endorsement is available. So a person that has been doing post-application nitrogen can buy it, and those that are going to do it for the first time could think about doing that. So the basic requirements are that you're going to post-apply nitrogen, split apply nitrogen, and that you buy a combo plan, which is RP with harvest price exclusion, or YP.
Does the underlying crop insurance unit matter?
So the underlying unit can differ from your units that are used to insure the RP plan. So if you buy enterprise units, you could use enterprise units on this policy, or you could break it out into basic and optional units. If you choose to break it out by basic and optional units, you have to have an APH yield, or you have to have records to form an APH yield. I would also note that the lower the unit, the more the cost will be per acre, because subsidy rates decline with basic and optional units as compared to enterprise units.
Hey, thanks, Gary.
You're welcome.
We've been talking with Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, about the PACE endorsement for crop insurance. That's the post-application coverage endorsement for nitrogen applications made to corn after it is planted. You can read more on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Crop insurance decisions will need to be made by mid-March. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City now joins us to discuss the growing regions and the weather across the planet. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We're bracing for some cool shots of air coming up. It is midwinter, so I guess we have to put up with that.
We'll come back to the United States in just a bit, hear more about those cold temperatures. But let's start in South America, where they did get some rainfall. Can you tell me about Argentina to begin with?
Yeah, you know, the last time we spoke, Argentina was in big trouble. The topsoil moisture was totally exhausted, and subsoil moisture was running short to very short. Temperatures last week, almost every day, were 100 to 106, and then there were some extremes that finally peaked at 113 on Saturday, just before rain and thunderstorms started to evolve. And over the second half of the holiday weekend, we did see rain occur across a fair amount of Argentina's crop country, but it was quite varied. Some of the areas in the easternmost parts of the country got 1 to 2 and even some 2 to 3 inch amounts, but those are minor grain and oilseed production areas. There was a little bit of rain in parts of Cordoba, which is far more important than some of these areas I just mentioned. And there was also some erratic rains down in Buenos Aires. Now, in the last 24 hours, we've done a better job in Buenos Aires with some 1 to 3 3/4 inch amounts of rain in a small part of that province. And the good news is that the areas that have yet to see the moisture of significance will be getting it starting tomorrow night and going through Saturday. And during that time period, there's going to be some training thunderstorms occurring across the heart of the most important grain and oilseed production areas. And we may end up with 2 to 4 and some local 6 inch amounts of rainfall by the time we get to this time next week across some of that area. Now, it's not going to be everybody, so don't get ahead of me. But we will be seeing further improvement in Argentina's moisture profile. Now, a little farther to the north, outside of the main grain and oilseed areas, but in the far northern part of Argentina, there's not going to be much rain. And that area is kind of cotton country with a little bit of minor grain and oilseeds there, and that region will stay very dry.
How about in Paraguay?
Paraguay, I feel sorry for the folks in Paraguay. They have been hot and dry for an extended period of time. And just yesterday, temperatures were still running 100 to 110 degrees. I don't think it's rained significantly in parts of that country in quite a while. It's been 10 days of excessive heat there, and it was warm even in December. I just can't see how they're going to be able to produce much of anything this year, and it is going to be an agricultural failure for them. You know, some of the immediate neighboring areas there in western Paraná, Brazil, Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil, and Mato Grosso do Sul, Brazil, have also been caught up in some of that dryness at times, but none of those Brazilian areas have been as deeply impacted as Paraguay. And I don't think Paraguay has a chance of seeing any kind of big relief for at least another 7 days. And when they do get it, I'm not convinced how much they will be able to benefit from it.
In other parts of Brazil, it had been raining too much. Have things abated for them?
Yes, they have. A nice high-pressure system built in from the Atlantic last weekend and has been suppressing rain very nicely in those previously waterlogged areas. And so we are now experiencing a drying trend, which is perfect because they want the ground to firm up so they can get their heavy machinery into the fields, and also to help promote better soybean maturation for that early crop that will now be harvested aggressively over these next 2 or 3 weeks so that the safrinha corn and cotton can be planted behind it. And further good news for these areas in Brazil includes the likelihood that a week from now, going into the early days of February, we will see seasonal rains resume in a favorable manner, not excessive rains, but a mix of rain and sunshine, which will support those safrinha crops and also allow for further harvest progress to take place.
Here in the United States, you started by telling us there could be high pressure bringing some colder air to us. Sure looks like that's moving across parts of the Midwest today.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind it when we have such a delayed start to winter. I mean, our coldest day of the year is usually in the last days of January, and this is our first repetitive opportunity for cool shots to move across the heart of the Midwest and the eastern part of the country. You know, December was just crazy warm. Well, we've got at least three, if not four, little waves of cold air that will come through the heart of the Midwest. They'll come down from the central part of Canada's prairies through the northern plains and right into the heart of the Midwest into the Atlantic coast states eventually. And each one of these shots of cold air certainly will generate below normal temperatures, but they're separated by a short-term bout of warming. So we'll go between normal and below normal two or three times as each one of these cold surges comes through. The orientation of the cold is such that the temperatures will be most anomalously below normal to the east of hard red winter wheat country. Now, there will be a little bit of opportunity for some near 0 degree low temperatures tomorrow morning, and again during midweek next week out there in the central plains. And there's not going to be much snow on the ground, but I doubt seriously there's going to be any widespread negative impact on that crop. Now, some of the soft wheat in Illinois and Missouri may also be near zero when these colder air masses come through. And there may not be a lot of snow in those areas either. But again, I don't expect to see winter kill to be much of an issue. But I can't sit here and tell you there won't be a few fields out there that might be negatively impacted.
Is there snow we need to talk about?
Well, there is an opportunity for some snow to come into the west central parts of the hard red winter wheat belt. As these cold surges come through, there will be a chance for some significant snow to occur. It's upslope snow is what we call it when the wind blows from the northeast and comes up against the mountains in Colorado. There's often a little outbreak of snow that evolves. And some of the models last night were suggesting a tremendous amount of snow and moisture would occur in Colorado and western Kansas down to the Texas Panhandle. Well, that was way overblown. And that's, you know, if anyone has seen that particular model run, don't buy it. We're not going to see any kind of meaningful relief for the drought in hard red winter wheat country, not only in this 10-day period coming up, but probably over the next few weeks, unfortunately.
Hey, thank you, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.